Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ira Melman. The U.S. vice president puts a Kurdish group in the same category as ISIS. Vice President Joe Biden has stressed the strategic importance of Turkey following a meeting with Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu in Istanbul. Biden said both countries have made progress on a number of issues. Dorian Jones has more from Istanbul.
The Syrian conflict and the war against Islamic State, or Daesh as it's called, topped the agenda of talks between Vice President Biden and Prime Minister Davutoğlu. The meeting comes ahead of next week's scheduled Syrian peace talks in Vienna. Biden, addressing reporters with Davutoğlu, stressed that diplomacy is not the only option for Washington in resolving the situation in Syria.
We do know that it would be better if we could reach a political solution, but we are prepared. We're prepared, if that's not possible, to have a military solution to this operation and taking out Daesh.
Ankara has been pressing Washington to intervene militarily in the conflict. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Syrian opposition group said Saturday it is impossible to begin a negotiating process with the government without the implementation of UN resolutions pertaining to humanitarian issues. And they denounced what they said were Russian dictates to the opposition negotiating team. A strong joint statement signed by 45 opposition and rebel groups said that while they support a political process, they hold the Syrian government and its Russian backers responsible for any failure in peace talks due to their ongoing crimes. This comes as U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry in Saudi Arabia said the U.S. and Gulf allies have clarity on how to proceed with those talks. This is VOA News. The chief of the International Monetary Fund says she believes Europe's refugee crisis is placing the continent's cherished Schengen zone at risk. Christine Lagarde, the IMF managing director, said Saturday the swelling number of refugees in Europe has pushed the Schengen agreement to a make-or-break point. When asked at the World Economic Forum in Davos if the crisis put the Schengen area in peril, Lagarde said, "Yes, I think so." Schengen area is comprised of 26 European countries that have mutually decided to eliminate passport and immigration controls at their joint borders, enabling the citizens of the Schengen zone countries to travel internationally without any limitations. Europe is facing the worst economic crisis since World War II. Almost 1 million refugees have reached Germany alone. Many of the migrants looking for a better life are escaping war and poverty in Middle Eastern and African countries. Pakistan has arrested 5 suspects for the deadly attack on Bacha Khan University in Charasada that left at least 20 people dead, 18 students and 2 teachers. Speaking to reporters in Peshawar, military spokesman Asim Bajawa said the suspects are charged with facilitating the assault because they provided the attackers with shelter, transport, and weapons. Bajawa said the 3 other suspects, including 2 women, are still at large. They received training, he said, in Afghanistan and crossed over into Pakistan from the Turkum border between the 2 countries. Bajawa said that the Wednesday attack was masterminded by Umar Mansoor, a Pakistani Taliban militant based in Afghanistan, who was also held responsible for the December 2014 massacre of 134 children in the city of Peshawar. Washington, D.C. and much of the U.S. East Coast are being pounded by a major winter storm, expected to dump around 60 centimeters of snow on much of the region. Winds of up to 80 kilometers per hour are expected to create near whiteout conditions. Massive snow drifts and widespread power outages. Coastal flooding is also possible. As of early Saturday, much of the Washington area had already received around 25 centimeters of snow, with accumulation expected to continue well into Sunday. By the time it passes, though, the snowstorm could be one of the city's top 10 worst in recorded history, according to forecasters. Burundi's president is remaining firm on his rejection of an African Union-proposed peacekeeping force to help restore calm to his country. During a meeting with the UN Security Council delegation Friday, President Pierre Nkurunziza said the African Union must respect Burundi as a member state, and we must be consulted on the matter, he said. I'm Ira Melman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
It is unfortunate that the government of transitional national unity was not formed yesterday in accordance with the GMAT timetable, because the SPLM-IO did not submit the list of those who were actually designated for ministerial position.
Rival groups in South Sudan failed to form a unity transitional government, a key demand in the recently signed peace accord.
The commission has set the 16th of May as the start of campaigns for this year's elections. And it will close a day before the election on the 10th of August.
The Zambian Electoral Commission releases nomination dates ahead of the upcoming August 11 general election.
The army cannot say if the group was able to get away with any weapons, but say that an investigation was still underway and security has been reinforced.
And an arms depot on the outskirts of Burkina Faso's capital Ouagadougou comes under attack. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and his former vice president and rebel leader Dr. Riek Machar failed to form a unity transitional government to meet a key demand in an agreement signed in Ethiopia to end the country's conflict. The rebels refused to send the names of their proposed ministers to be included in the yet-to-be-formed administration after accusing Mr. Kiir of unilaterally establishing 28 new states, which they say is against the spirit and letter of the agreement. Atteni Wekateni, spokesman for President Kiir, told me the country's leader is not to blame for the refusal of the rebels to be part of the transitional government.
It is unfortunate that the government of transitional national unity was not formed yesterday in accordance with the GMAT timetable, because the SPLM-IO did not submit the list of those who were actually designated for ministerial position. So the president cannot appoint an MP seat. The issue of 28 states is now the issue of the people of South Sudan. So the president is not ready to rescind the order. If the SPLM-IO become adamant that they wanted only to implement peace agreement on the basis of 10 states, then that will be unthinkable for some time, unless they accept the 28 states, because they themselves, they have divided South Sudan into 21 states. President Salva Kiir only added 7 states to become 28 states. So this is the basis of what we think is what the peace agreement should be implemented.
But I tell you, the problem is former president of Botswana, Festus Mohai, said that the establishment of these new 28 states will be a hindrance to the full implementation of the peace accord. Now the rebels have said that they are not agreeing except the 10th state that has been clearly stipulated in the agreement signed between President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. So they are saying that President Kiir is to blame for the deadlock or stalemate of the failure to form a transitional unity government. What do you say to that?
No, the problem is not Salva Kiir. It's not a Salva Kiir problem. You know, unless people want to capitalize on the trivial issues and leave the real thing, the fact that people of South Sudan want peace for them is incumbent upon the government and the SPLM-IO to ensure that peace is returned to people of South Sudan. Whether it is on the basis of 10 states or 28 states, the fundamental issue is the implementation. And the implementation, the only two states were actually allocated to the SPLM-IO has now produced 6 states. Then they should think to negotiate on the basis of that. If they wanted a share of those 2 states to be given to them as 6 states, then it should be an issue now, not the issue of going back to reverse the issue of 28 states, because this is unthinkable. And President Salva Kiir is not ready to rescind that agreement, because to rescind the establishment of 28 states, because people have taken it upon themselves, and it is now the people issue. If you rescind that the establishment of 28 states, anybody who rescind it will risk uprising.
You are at a stalemate now. The implementation of the agreement is in trouble because of this 28 states that the rebels are saying runs against the spirit and letter of this agreement signed between the two. If the president says he will not rescind his decision, then basically the implementation of the full agreement will not be in place. This risks a chance of another conflict if this is not resolved. Why is this so? Why is the president so adamant?
No, it's not the president who is adamant. You know, let's understand here, it is the rebels who are actually doing it as a scapegoat for them. Since they have seen the international community and, represented by the GMEC, has also set, the establishment of 28 state is an impediment to implementation. And the rebels wanted to replicate the same position. But the truth of the matter is that no matter what we want to do in South Sudan, the best thing for us is to bring peace to people of South Sudan, and, not to dwell on the issue of 28 state or 10 state, simply because there are more problems than the issue of 28 state. If we embark on the proper implementation of peace agreement, then the people of South Sudan will have to be restored back to peace before anybody, talked about 28 state. If there is anybody who is not comfortable with 28 state after the implementation, then let them provide the money. And the people of South Sudan will be asked to vote between 28 state or 30 state and 10 state. And you will see the results will be shocking.
So what happens next?
What will happen next is that, the creation of 28 state is substantiating and is complementing the peace agreement. And therefore, I am urging the SPLM-IO to think positively about the creation of 28 state, because they themselves have created 21 state. Ideally, they agree on the basis that 10 state is not enough for the people of South Sudan. The only problem is that we went further than what they have actually earmarked as 21 state. We went to 28 state. So we should agree on this. And also the international community should allow people of South Sudan, whether they are IO or government, or you call them in FDs or wherever, they should allow South Sudanese to gather momentum and understand themselves instead of just devising a way for them to disagree or to agree.
Attorney Wek Attorney is the spokesman for South Sudanese President Salva Kiir. He spoke with me from the capital, Juba. The Electoral Commission of Zambia, or ECZ, has released the dates of nominations, including for those running in the presidential poll, in preparation for the country's August 11 general election. The ECZ also announced it has so far registered more than 1.5 million prospective voters in an ongoing bid to compile a new voters list to be used for the presidential, parliamentary and local elections. The Electoral Commission's Director of Elections, Priscilla Isaac, told me the commission has also announced the date for official campaigning to give all candidates and political parties adequate time to prepare for the poll.
In terms of the nominations, we'll start with nominations for the mayors and the council chairperson on the 28th of June. And then the following day, on the 29th of June, we'll have the nominations for National Assembly elections. That's for members of parliament and then for councillors. And then the presidential nominations will run concurrently with these two other sets of nominations. They will run from the 28th of June to the 2nd of July 2016.
There has been an issue of verification of school certificates. Who is in charge of that? Who verifies it? And why will the Electoral Commission be concerned with itself about the certification of aspirants?
Well, first of all, it's one of the nomination requirements that has been given in the Constitution. And the body that will be responsible for verifying such certificates is the Examination Council of Zambia. So we will work it out with the Examination Council of Zambia as to how that verification will be done. But it's the responsibility of any aspiring candidate to ensure that they have their grade 12 or its equivalent certified by the Examination Council of Zambia. And we are getting in touch with the Examination Council of Zambia for them to tell us what is legally considered to be the equivalent of the grade 12 certificate.
When will official campaigning begin? Because it appears all these political parties are going around trying to converse votes, although it's not official yet. When will it be official to allow the parties to campaign freely ahead of the August 11 general election?
Well, the commission has set the 16th of May as the start of campaigns for this year's election, and it will close a day before the election on the 10th of August. And this period fits in with the dissolution of parliament, because now the constitution provides that parliament should be dissolved 90 days before the election. So we counted backwards, and it is our estimate that by the 16th of May, parliament will have been dissolved. It makes it, well, slightly easier to manage, maybe I would say, because then you don't have any ministers in office and so forth.
Let's talk about the voter register that you recently compiled. So far, how many prospective voters were captured in this recently compiled voter list, and what is the next step forward after the compilation of the voters register?
Okay, well, we have over 1.5 million new registrations, which is good. About, I think, about 93% of our target of the 1.7 million new registrations that we had targeted for. And the registration is still ongoing at the district center. And subject to funding, it is our intention to go back to do another 14 days mid-February and then close the voter registration exercise, both in terms of the mobile and at district centers, by the 29th of February, so that we can now start doing the cleaning of the register to enable us to produce the provisional voters' roll for inspection. And once we do the inspection and do the final cleanup, we expect to certify the final voters register for this year's election on the 31st of July, 2016.
So you expect the cooperation of Zambians throughout this process, correct?
Yes, please, especially the inspection. The inspection is, you know, very important, because even if you're in possession of a voter's card right now, you must remember that you're still considered to be an applicant until the final certification of the register, where it is only those that will be on the register who will be able to vote. So it is important that during the inspection period, we will announce all those who registered, even from before, should just take the trouble to go and make sure that they are appearing in the register, so that if they're not appearing in the register, they can follow up with us as to why not. And also, if there are any mistakes or errors in terms of their particulars, an opportunity for them to correct their mistakes. And also, if you need to do a final transfer, there's an opportunity for an individual to transfer before the certification of the roll.
Priscilla Isaac is the Director of Elections at the Electoral Commission of Zambia. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Depot was attacked on the outskirts of Burkina Faso's capital city early Friday. Burkinabe authorities blame members of the country's disbanded presidential guard, the elite unit that was behind a failed coup last September. For the VOA, Emily Ube has more from Ivory Coast commercial capital Abidjan.
The attack happened at 3 a.m. Friday. A Burkinabe army spokesman says a group of men raided the armed depot located just outside the capital, Ouagadougou.
Yeah, les auteurs de cette tentative ont été identifiés.
There have been no casualties, said Lieutenant Colonel William Yameogo. The authors of these attacks have been identified. Among them are members of the former presidential guard, he said. The guard, or RSP, was a 1,500-man elite unit loyal to former president Blaise Compaoré, who was ousted in 2014 following massive popular protest after 27 years in power. That same group was behind a short-lived coup against the transitional government last September, just weeks before milestone elections meant to restore democratic rule to Burkina Faso. The unit was disbanding soon after, and the election took place in November, bringing Roch-Marc Christian Kabore to power. The army could not say if the group was able to get away with any weapons, but say that an investigation was still underway and security has been reinforced. This raid comes 1 week after an Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist attack in Ouagadougou left 30 people dead. Emilia for VOA News in Abidjan.
Most villages in the drought-prone Masvingo province in Zimbabwe, where the ruling party is planning to hold a lavish $800,000 birthday bash for President Robert Mugabe next month, say they are living from hand to mouth due to the current dry spell. Majority of the people claim they are surviving on eating wild fruit in a region where about 5,000 cattle have died as a result of lack of pasture and state-assisted stock feed. For VOA, Gandri Maramba reports villagers are fuming that ZANU-PF is planning to throw a birthday bash for the president when most of them can't have a decent meal a day.
Baobab fruit porridge, tree roots and related wild pickings are currently saving the lives of people in Masingo province, where the current dry spell has reduced fuels into dust barrels. The dry spell appears to be fueled by the El Nino weather phenomenon that has brought a lot of heat in the region, widely known for producing top-grade sugarcane, ethanol, and other related products. Although all the dry spell is visible, and government is said to resettle over 20,000 people who were displaced by floods near Tokwe Mkosi Dam 2 years ago, there is a lot happening in Masingo province, with a population of about 1.5 million, half of them being threatened by the dry spell. Meetings are being held behind closed doors, where some top ZANU-PF officials are planning to throw a birthday party for President Mugabe, who turns 92 on February 21st. This has drawn the ire of local people, who say ZANU-PF leaders are cold-hearted, as they will be holding an event that is said to cost about 800,000. One of the irate local inhabitants is Prosper Tiringindi.
To me, it doesn't make sense because if I look right now, the current situation that we have in Zimbabwe, actually we are facing a series of drought. Actually, I think the president must do something with that money. They must buy maize from outside of the country and feed the Zimbabweans rather than to enjoy any day. Yes, of course, we can celebrate flamboyant birthday, but actually the citizens are suffering.
Another local villager, Mugove Makonesi, says the lavish birthday is not a new thing, as the president has been doing this for almost 3 decades.
Mugabe is well known the world over for being a very insensitive leader. This is the time that they should be mobilizing resources to save the lives of the people of Zimbabwe, and particularly the people of Masingo province, who are perennially hunger and drought ravaged. This insensitivity is nothing surprising. But one of the reasons maybe why he's so insensitive it is because there are so many gatekeepers around him. Probably he's being given the wrong impression. Because if my experience of going out in the rural areas is anything to go by, there is terrible, terrible hunger out there. And I find it to be extremely in bad taste for a president to spend that much for a useless function like his. Here is a whole president who is celebrating the twilight of his life at the expense of those young people in the province who are dying of hunger.
Villagers say the ruling party, which has been in power for more than 35 years, should dump the birthday bash and start looking into the needs of all communities. Pilani Moyo, a Mwenezi district villager who is into cattle farming, says President Mugabe and his party should use the funds raised for the birthday party to buy fodder for millions of livestock.
It is very painful. We had asked for assistance from the government to stock our cattle and to buy cattle feed, but till today there is no response. We are very, very sad that our government is using a lot of money for just one day for a bash, for one person to enjoy, whilst our families are suffering and our cattle are dying.
But ZANU-PF birthday party organizing committee member JP Jabun has strongly defended plans for throwing a lavish birthday party for the president, saying Mr. Mugabe deserves to be honored in such a big way. Jabunu, who is the ZANU-PF member of parliament for Begita South, says preparations for the bash are at an advanced stage. This is not going down well with Zimbabwe's opposition parties. Murangano Chanyao, regional chairperson of the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, believes that ZANU-PF has misplaced priorities.
As Masingo Urban MDCT, we really condemn that bash with the conduct that it deserves. How can they afford to have that bash when over 500,000 people are facing starvation? Rather than holding that bash, it would be rather better to channel those funds to the starving people in Masingo province.
This is not the first time that people in Zimbabwe have been grumbling over the splashing of huge amounts of money for hosting the president and the first family's birthday gigs. Last year, Zimbabweans were infuriated when at least $3 million was spent for a lavish 50th birthday party for Mr. Mugabe's wife, Grace, reporting in Masvingo's country, Maramba.
The Safe Abortion Act, passed by Sierra Leone's parliament in December, is on hold. Religious leaders have raised concerns and want it reviewed, but activists say legalizing abortion in the West African country is long overdue. For VOA, Nina DeVries has more from the capital, Freetown.
The bill was ready for the president to sign into law, but religious leaders like Reverend Christiana Sachin-Karoma protested, saying the bill is immoral.
The mandate we have is to secure life. The mandate we have is to save lives and not to destroy life.
Karoma adds that she doesn't think Sierra Leone has enough trained doctors to perform abortions or the proper medical facilities. Dr. Aisha Fofana Ibrahim, the president of 50/50, a women's rights group, says having abortion legalized will make the practice safer. Sierra Leone has one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the world, and that's partly due to unsafe abortion, she says. According to a report from the country's Ministry of Health and the non-governmental organization IPAS, one in every 1,000 women giving birth in Sierra Leone dies from pregnancy-related causes. The World Health Organization estimates that over 6 million unsafe abortions occur annually in Africa. Dr. Ibrahim says there is also a lot of sexual violence towards women and girls, including by their own guardians, and it needs to be addressed.
These are the same guardians that take these kids to back doors to have abortions done. So if you have it legally, at least you will save somebody's life. And people should also look at what's happening in the country in terms of rape, in terms of incest, in terms of violence against women, and how this could solve our health problems, really, in terms of the high maternal mortality rates.
The African Commission on Human and People's Rights has also recently raised concern. The organization has launched a campaign to decriminalize abortion across the continent. A former nurse in Sierra Leone, speaking on condition of anonymity for safety reasons, says that she was accused of performing an unsafe abortion in which the pregnant mother died. The nurse was sent to jail for 5 years.
If this order was passed, I would not have been in prison, you see. I would not have been in prison.
For now, it's not clear if President Ernest Bai Koroma will sign the bill into law. Members of parliament are set to meet with religious leaders before the end of the month to further discuss their concerns. The current abortion act dates from 1861, a full century before Sierra Leone became independent. Nina DeVries, VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has expressed condolences to victims of the recent attack by Al-Shabaab militants on a Kenyan military installation in Somalia. A number of soldiers remain unaccounted for. VOA's Jill Craig speaks to families of some of the missing soldiers.
During a ceremony at Nairobi's Armed Forces Memorial Hospital Friday, President Uhuru Kenyatta expressed condolences and gratitude to the soldiers and families of soldiers who were killed, injured, and missing as a result of the recent Al-Shabaab attack on Kenya's base in El Ade, Somalia.
We owe our young soldiers a debt of gratitude, one we can scarcely begin to repay, but we shall honor them, and honor them we will.
Many of the families are still awaiting word about their loved ones, since the government has not released official numbers and many of the troops' whereabouts continue to remain unknown. Kosge Lamokwo is among those waiting to find out what happened to his brother Abraham, who he says has been in the army for 25 years. But Lamokwo is urging patience for others in his situation. He says the families who are affected by this crisis just have to wait and be patient for the government to finish its verification process. He says the government hasn't yet released the final list of the dead, missing, and those who were rescued. Ephraim Madula Anjeri's son, Stephen, joined the Kenyan Defense Forces in 2010. After previous deployments to Somalia and northeastern Kenya, he was sent to El Ade just 2 weeks ago. Anjeri disagrees with Lamokwo, saying the government needs to provide the families with timely information.
At least what the government should tell us, first, they could visit the affected families, talk to the affected families, do counseling and guiding, and then tell us to be patient as they do the search, instead of leaving us in darkness, because this is a thing that has traumatized many families. They need guiding and counseling.
During Friday's ceremony, President Kenyatta said Kenya's defense forces will remain in Somalia.
We are at war with extremists. We are at war with terrorists. We are at war with fanatics, and this has to be a war that we must win. Despite the adversity, we remain unbowed and resolved to build a strong, prosperous, and secure nation.
Kenyan troops working with the African Union have battled al-Shabaab militants inside Somalia since October 2011. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection, Enjoy.
Kuri no zambala zema, mutima Ngomesa kurwanya Perdidamente amor.
And that was our music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It is always a pleasure for me to share with my colleagues who are working with the Voice of America. Every passing week, I pay close attention to U.S. policy towards Africa. I also look at African opinions on an attitude toward the United States. This week, a very important event occurred within the United States, primarily for Americans, but also for the world. That event was the State of the Union, delivered by President Barack Hussein Obama. This speech, historians are going to say, will be remembered by human beings who are looking at America in the 21st century, because Barack Hussein Obama's election to the United States was unprecedented. And his final State of the Union takes us back to the founding father of the United States, George Washington. Washington left a legacy, gave his final message to the American nation at a very critical moment. At that time, America was a young republic, a revolutionary development in world history, which is now remembered for more than 200 years. Marking America as a republic, I have said this in many other places, the American Revolution was an attempt to reproduce in human society serious efforts by other men in history, particularly within the European experience, who tried to create a republic. It is not an easy job. It is a very difficult task. It is part of the human experience to govern oneself without having someone governing you in terms of a political culture, political theology, and political economy defined by human beings looking up into the heavens, hoping that some heavenly body is governing them through his decree by human beings accepting what some European politicians and scholars call divine confirmation of rulership. The American Revolution was a radical departure from that narrative. Human beings living on this planet but paying closer attention to the fact that there is a heavenly creator, and they move on to create a government which will be defined differently by the 44 presidents of the United States, beginning with George Washington. And that American narrative will be remembered by the Declaration of Independence, by the Constitution of the United States, and the collective experiences of all Americans who came from the Revolution to the establishment of the Republic. This past week, that long history was dramatized once again on the American political stage by the appearance of a young man whose father came from Kenya, whose mother came from white America, and you have a very revolutionary development in world history. I have said it in many other places before when he was elected, how history in its various ways of ironies and paradoxes, telling human beings in the making of history. President Obama's State of the Union is being debated by his supporters and by his opponents. And that debate is going to be here, just like the departure of George Washington created controversies, but also powerful insights. And now he is immortalized because there is a standing monument in his honor in the national capital, the George Washington Memorial. Barack Hussein Obama is going to be remembered by America just the way it is today with regard to Barack Hussein Obama and his last State of the Union.
Thank you, Dr. Yang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer for today Jackson Invonganyi, and engineer for today John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, when the leopard has a broken paw, the antelope comes to collect an old debt. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply alarmed by reports, including those from the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights and the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, of serious human rights violations and abuses in Burundi, including eyewitness reports of mass graves, a sharp increase in alleged enforced disappearances and torture, and reports of sexual violence by security forces. U.S. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner said these and other reports further underscore the urgent need for the government of Burundi to allow for the immediate full deployment and unimpeded access of African Union human rights observers to investigate these allegations. It is imperative that the government of Burundi remove all bureaucratic and practical roadblocks it has used to prevent the AU human rights and military observers from fulfilling their mandate for the past 6 months to investigate reports of violence committed by any side in the conflict. The United States, said Mr. Toner, calls upon the government of Burundi to permit an immediate, impartial investigation into these recent allegations and to hold accountable all those found responsible for crimes. The United States remains concerned about Burundi's ongoing political and humanitarian crisis and the resulting suffering it has brought to the people of Burundi. We once again call on all parties to reject unlawful violence and reiterate that the only way to resolve the crisis gripping the country is for all parties to agree promptly to engage in internationally mediated, inclusive dialogue without preconditions.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.